Live from the Civic Media Studios at WRCE in Richland Center, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Alba Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Alba.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Alba, along with our producer and engineer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, at the world headquarters off of State Street, or on State Street, just off the Capitol Square in Madison. We are on location here this Monday, August 28th, 2023, in Richland Center at WRCE. Thanks to Phil Nee and the entire crew here at RCE RCO for always making us feel right at home back here at the old station in southwest Wisconsin. Hour two, Mr. Zommers, it's going to be a good one. Glad everybody tuned in. What do you feel? We started talking about this just before the break. This great opinion article over the weekend by this author, Will Bunch, of the Philadelphia Inquirer, saying that journalism is just failing miserably when it comes to covering what's happening in America.
This is something that one of Pat Kreitlow's guests on Up North News Radio, every Friday he has Mark Jacob on, a former editor at the Chicago Sun Tribune and some other publications.
Sure, yeah.
And this is what he talks about most weeks, because it doesn't stop happening, that events will happen and the major media will both sides it. And they'll say, Donald Trump and other Republicans are being indicted a bajillion times for all these crimes they committed. Also, the liberals kick puppies.
Right, something like that. Yeah. We're going to take your phone calls on this. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Do you feel that we as the media, the mainstream media, or any media for that matter, do you think that we should cover the 2024 race differently than other races? 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Before we get to that, a couple of, not so much breaking news, but happened over the last couple, 3 hours here. Donald Trump, former president, couple of court dates, in case you have not heard. The court case out in D.C. by Jack Smith, one presiding there, the special counsel. The court date has been set. Trial will begin on March 4th of next year, 2024. I believe right before Super Tuesday in the primary election cycle. And then closer, just next week, his arraignment will happen in Georgia in the Fulton County Jail on September 6th. And apparently a judge up there, Judge Chutkan, I believe her name is, in D.C., when the Trump attorney has tried to say, no, we want to try this in 2026, she basically, in legal terms, said, I'm not having it. I think the quote was, you and I have a very large difference over what it takes to prepare for this case. And she said, we're not going to have this in 2026. It's going to happen next year. And she set the court date for March 4th, 2024. Could take several weeks or more for that court case to play out. But I believe it's safe to say we'll have at least a decision on the D.C. court case well before the November election next year. So we'll see. Long ways to go, but that is happening this afternoon. Also over the weekend, this horrific shooting in northern Florida where a white dude blatantly shot black people, I believe at a dollar store. And now it comes out that he was what's called Baker Acted in 2017. I'm familiar with this, having worked for an attorney in Florida for a bit. Baker Acting simply means that if a law enforcement or a medical professional, a doctor, can prove that this individual could harm others or themselves, they are put under basically a hospital watch, not allowed to leave for 72 hours. And then the court makes a determination whether they're out or not. This individual in 2017 was Baker Acted. And it brings up this interesting question over the weekend. You know, is this hiding behind your mental illness? Well, I mean, anybody who shoots someone at some level is mentally ill, right? I think we can agree on that. But what happened in Florida, I do not think, and David Hogg, one of the survivors of the Parkland school shooting, used some pretty rough language, saying that, you know, it's BS. to say that this was due to mental illness. This is just pure out hatred and racism. All right, this is national white nationalist white supremacy. This dude in Florida hated black people for being black. And he shot as many as he could, and then he killed himself. So let's not confuse what happened in Florida with mental illness. This is pure out hatred. And our friend Rick Wilson, who appeared with us last Wednesday at the presidential debate in Milwaukee, he lives in North Florida. And he tweeted out over the weekend saying, this is what's happening here. This has been a long time coming. This resurgence of the KKK, of white nationalism, white supremacism. He said this thing was bound to happen. And sadly, it did. Again, as a gun owner, as a hunter, I also believe in reasonable gun control. I also believe that we need to educate our kids, our country, on hatred. And we should stop banning books and stop burning books and educate people. Because what we saw in Florida over the weekend is the result of hatred and racism. We'll come back and talk about the media and why these things I just mentioned, why are they covered differently? Should they be covered differently? Your phone calls, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. We're on location at Richland Center. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 15 past the hour of 2 o'clock, pursuing truth wherever it may lead. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, 15 minutes from now, our friend Chris Paul, CP, is going to join us of Cracked.com. Going to tell us why the 90s was the perfect decade to drive down a ski hill. You're not going to want to miss that. Chris Paul's in at the bottom of the hour. Talking about this story in the Philadelphia Inquirer. It's an opinion piece, actually, by Will Bunch. A great piece talking about a key. I'm not going to read you the whole thing, but Google it up, as my former boss used to say. Here is a line. It was Wednesday night, the presidential debate was, quote, a remarkable night of imagery over substance. Yet there was little discussion of why this accused felon was getting a phalanx of dozens of motor cops, many of whom were drawn to Trump's authoritarian bluster like moths to light. Trump's glowing mugshot instantly became the most talked about picture in American history. Yet not one pundit was able to explain why tens of millions of everyday voters are so eager to return to the White House this man who attempted a coup on January 6th, 2021. And then jumping down, America is entering its most important pivotal year since 1860, and the U.S. media is doing a terrible job explaining what is actually happening. Too many of us, with our highfalutin poli-sci degrees and our dog-eared copies of the late Richard Ben Kramer's What It Takes, are still covering elections like it was the 20th century, as if the old touchstones like debates or a 30-minute spot still matter. We're building towards a November 5th, 2024, might have the outward trappings of an election, but it is really a show of force. What we call the Republican Party is barely a political party in any sense of the word, but a dangerous anti-social movement that has embraced many of the tenets of fascism, from calls of violence to the dehumanizing of quote-unquote others, to desperate refugees at the borders to transgender youth. There is, in reality, no 2024 primary, because this movement embraced its infallible strongman in Trump's 8 years ago, And there is no quote-unquote Trump scandal because for them, each new crime or sexual assault is merely another indictment of the messenger. The arrogant elites, from what their contempt is the number one issue. The foot soldiers stopped believing in democracy a long time ago, no matter how big an Orwellian sign Fox News erects. Part of the opinion piece in the Philadelphia Inquirer by Will Bunch. What say you? Do you think that the media needs to cover this differently, this election? I mean, be more blunt about it than ever before. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Let's go to the phone lines here as I dial up. I believe Mark in the Mark from the SAC. Are you on the line? Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. It is just remarkable that the media fails to recognize this. It keeps coming to my mind, you know, looking at Donald Trump's skull coming out. And one of the first things that came to my mind is one of those, this is back from when I was a kid, but the Jewish Chukchuga Society had an ad, a PSA, and it was, you know, hate who you hurt the most, and it was had a little tune to it, but that had this figure marching toward you with a hair of yellow, and the face just kept getting redder and redder and redder till it got to you, just getting angrier and angrier and angrier till at the end of it, it just exploded. And the end of the slogan was "Hate hurts you." I mean, that's, you know, that there's so much hatred out there that is apparently been embraced by, you know, that unfortunately to the main the Republican Party these days that they are exploiting hate the way we haven't seen, you know, in this country, you know, like since, you know, it's been always there, but I mean, they're exploiting it to such an extent they want to rev it up, and it is just distressing that the anti-Semitism that's woven into it, and the ironic part of the anti-Semitism to me is that the support we see for Israel from people that are do this anti-Semitic stuff all the time, yet they support Israel, and you know and I think some of the end times philosophers' philosophy comes into there. That, but I mean, it just is so ironic to me that they fail to recognize that in themselves, the anti-Semitism, the anti-immigrant, phobia that we've seen in this country in the past, we've seen it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the early 20th century was against Eastern Europeans because they tended to be Catholic for all things. That you know, another anathema thing that was in this country, the anti-Catholicism that was ran rampant through this country at various stages. That and that as well as the anti-Semitism and it just the virulence that they tend to want to ignore, and nobody wants, none of the Republicans are able to just come out and condemn what happened on January 6th on no uncertain terms, condemn the false electors, you know, philosophy that they tend to say, well, it's just political speech when it's just utter nonsense. If you actually read the law and read the Constitution, that the failure to recognize the hatred and how damaging it is to our body politic, and that, you know, I recognize the anger in myself sometimes, and I can get hyperbolic at times, but I have to tamp that down and say that's just not the way to behave, because like that old PSA says, that hate hurts you. I mean, when you're unwilling to forgive, that, the person that you're forgiving usually is a plus, but the first, when you give forgiveness, that's a gift to yourself as well as to the other person.
Mark, let me ask I appreciate your call so much. Always thoughtful. Let me ask you this, because I hope you listen to Wednesday when Trygve Olson from Lincoln Project is going to be here, because we're going to take a look back at some of these things you just said, brought up, and things that the Republican Party, when I was a part of it, used to stand for. And again, not that you have to necessarily agree with everything that the quote-unquote old Republican Party was about, but at least there was some common sense out there. And we're going to take a look back at that stuff with Trygve. But do you think, Mark, do you believe that we need to treat this? We in the media need to treat this election differently and be more blunt with our coverage.
Yes, I think that because you have to, there's not, the both sides do it thing is kind of, both sides may do it, but both sides are not doing it to the extent that the Republicans currently are doing these days. I mean, that the unwillingness to just condemn Donald Trump and the hatred that he's stirred up is just a sign of such moral cowardice. I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, that the Democrats tend to drub out people that for minor violations, and for Al Franken, for example, that I think he was just clowning on most of the stuff that was happening there. Mm-hmm. That and he shouldn't have done it, but I mean that they drove him out were the excesses that men like Donald Trump has done are, mm-hmm. are just, you know, basically not even they're lauded rather than condemned.
Well, I remember when, you know, I think one of the best people to cover an election in my lifetime was Scott Pelley during the 2016 election when he was the anchor of the CBS Evening News. And they come on and they do a story on Trump as a candidate. And they let the story play. But then they come back to Pelley at the anchor desk. And then they had it all prepared. And Pelley would say, actually, what Mr. Trump said, you know, and they would give fact checks and they would give the truth. I mean, it was Edward R. Murrow-esque, and I really miss that kind of journalism.
Yeah, I miss it as well. I mean, that I grew up, I was a child in the 60s, and I can remember Walter Cronkite being on the news, I mean, as well as the other people in the news. So, I mean, it just actually giving hard news and actually stating honest opinions about stuff that's going on. And today, we just don't. It's so corporatized, and they're so afraid of being labeled as the liberal media. Well, the liberal media actually is, for the most part, is corporate media, and the breath of fresh air that's blowing through the state now with, give you guys a plug. The civic media actually is giving a semi-equal voice to the right-wing media that's been out there for decades now in the state of Wisconsin. That as far as the radio waves, that it's a refreshing change to see people that, and for example, you guys take all callers. If I try calling into the Clan O'Donnell show, that I would probably not get on the air.
Well, yeah, I mean, I appreciate that, Mark, and you know, the credit goes to Sage Weil, Mike Crute, and the leadership of Civic Media, and all of our fine other hosts as well, and to our listeners and callers like you, who keep us honest and put in invaluable input into each show. Mark, I appreciate you calling. Always great to have you on the show. What say you? 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. This great view. If you have not read it, Google up Will Bunch, B-U-N-C-H, Will Bunch of the Philadelphia Inquirer, or just the Inquirer.com. And it's not the National Inquirer, okay? It's Inquirer.com or the Inquirer. Great opinion piece yesterday. Well, I'll read you a couple more sentences or a couple more paragraphs here. He says, Will Bunch saying, if you watch enough not Fox cable TV news, you'll occasionally see an expert on fascism, like NYU's Ruth Bengate or Yale's Timothy Snyder, explaining the roots of this American authoritarianism. Or you can read a piece like Margaret Sullivan's Guardian takeaway on the fascist appeal of Trump clone Rosenswamy. But then it's back to your regular programming, including a desperate desire to frame today's clash in the context of long-lost 20th century democratic norms, and to blame any transgression on a mysterious, quote-unquote, tribalism that plagues, quote-unquote, both sides. Let's go to the phone lines. Dick in Madison. Dick, thanks for calling. What say you?
You know, I had a thought about all this stuff with Trump over the weekend, in that the first time, he really wasn't elected, neither is the second. And I'm going to the Electoral College, and I'm tired of Democrats always saying, too, well, it'd be so hard to change. If we were to get the House and the Senate both back and hold the White House, it should be first priority. And we wouldn't even be talking about this. For instance, hearing his call again replayed over and over the weekend to Raffensperger going, give me a break, guys. Just give me – who would that call go to, Todd? The American people, give me a break. Can you spare me 3.5 million votes? 7.5 in the last one?
Yeah.
Who would the call actually be to? He'd have nowhere to turn. What would he call God and ask God for 3 million or 3.5 million? He lost both times, plain and simple. Get rid of the Electoral College.
You'll get no argument from me there. I think it's definitely time to do something different. it's certainly not going to, I think it is possible to change it in the future, but it's certainly not going to change by, you know, the 2024 election because of split government And I think it's important to your point to, again, to remind people that the 2020 election was the most free, the most fair, the most accurate, probably in my lifetime.
One last thing about him. I looked up something that he himself said. I'm talking about Trump. In 2012, he said something to the effect. He said something to the effect that this was a sham. He's talking about the Electoral College, and it's an absolute travesty that we have such a thing yet.
Appreciate the call. Thanks to you, Dick and Madison. Stay with us, Chris Pauls. Why the 90s was the perfect decade to drive a car down a ski hill on the other side. This is the Todd Allbo Show, live on location from Richland Center on the Civic Media Radio Network. Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allbo Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 2:33 on a Monday, August 28th. We are live on location in Richland, Central Wisconsin, in the Southwest, the Driftless area, here at the home studio, WRCE and WRCO, back in the day, and having one of my Richland Center native friends. All the way back to kindergarten, our very own Chris Pauls, producer on this show, also from cracked.com. I learned something over the weekend, or last week, Chris. We've known each other, as we said, since kindergarten. And first of all, thanks for being with us. Always great to have you on the show. But we interviewed another guy from Cracked last week, and this is not the first time this has happened. People in your professional world simply call you CP. You go by your initials. I did not know this, so I went down to the footbridge over the weekend, and by golly, I saw carved in one of the wood stakes there, what CP. So I guess you were here.
I have a perfect alibi for that.
Really?
I don't know anything about that. Yeah, the whole CP thing started at The Onion because everybody, there was just so many contributors there that you just get called by your initials. So,
oh, okay, sure.
CP it was. I mean, well, there are
fantastic. Anyway. You're on the show because you could be on the show anytime you want because you're part of it. But more importantly, you wrote this. We've been plugging it all day on the show. This great article. And I did not know that you'd written this. I read it over the weekend. Why the 90s were a perfect decade to drive down a ski hill. Explain, CP.
That is a great lead-in, Todd. But before we get to that, I just have to say that I was almost late today because I had a coworker and his family have emigrated to the United States from Israel. Mm. And I had to ask him what kind of gun he wanted.
Well, there you go.
Anyway, so this was an article that I wrote a couple years ago for Cracked, and it basically follows a story. Someone's phone is ringing.
I know it's not. I don't think it's ours. Is it? Maybe it's at the studio. I don't know. maybe it's the sensor. The sensor police are calling.
I haven't even done anything yet.
It's preemptive.
So I wrote this article for Cracked. I had this very unique experience when I was working at a ski hill, which shall remain Rib Mountain. Actually, it's not named Rib Mountain anymore.
Really? They changed the name?
Yeah. I worked there in the 1990s.
Too many complaints on the ribs, but anyway, go ahead. Anyway, go ahead. The ski hill previously named Rib Mountain. Go ahead.
Might want to stay real close to that. I was at the end of the year party, right?
Right.
End of the year's party. And a friend of mine, who I will very affectionately refer to as drinking buddy number one, and I were sitting in the lodge bar there having a pitcher of beer, and in walked this coworker of ours. And he was with his girlfriend. He was very excited. And he said, "We just drove down the hill in our car. Would you like to come?" And I was like, "Sure." I was a very young man. I was a very dumb man. That hasn't changed a lot over the years. I just happened to be a young man. And I do want to preface by saying, like, It's no longer the 1990s, people, and you should never, ever, ever do this. This is highly, highly, highly dangerous. No one should ever do it.
No, absolutely not.
That brings me to my first point about the 1990s, because I'm sure you just can't wait, Todd.
I've lived through it. Yes, go ahead. I live to tell the story.
First point about the 1990s is the guy that asked us to do this was driving a Buick Skylark. And I don't know if you're familiar with that model of car. They made them for a very long time, probably a lot longer than they ever should have. Mm-hmm. Let me just look here quick and I'll get you the exact number.
They were sold in town here locally by Jones Chevrolet Buick, I believe. Yes.
Yeah, but all the ones they sold were great.
Fantastic. Friend Chris still trying to buy things from Joe and Chevrolet here in town. All right, go ahead. They're a fine sponsor of the station, by the way. They do a great job.
So anyway, Skylarks were around for 46 years, unbelievably. But this thing was just a total boxy piece of crap. That's really what it was. And I feel like a lot of cars in the 1980s, it's not so much that like people bought those cars, but it seemed to be more that they were issued the cars. Like they kind of almost had them against their will. So anyway, this particular fellow was he didn't have a lot of emotion invested in this car because he'd already driven it down a ski hill once. And
it's still drivable.
It was drivable. It was completely drivable. Now, his girlfriend was with him and she had a bump on her forehead from, quote, hitting the ceiling the first time. Now, that should have been all I needed to just run the other way, but no, I didn't do that. I got into the back seat and up the hill we drove.
And this is, just be clear, this is not like some side road that goes, you're not going down, this is, you're going down the actual ski hill at the ski place formerly known as Rib Mountain.
Not yet. We did drive up an actual road.
All right.
There used to be a state park up there. I don't know if it's still there, but it was heavily fortified, Todd. And what I mean by that is there were two posts with a chain across the front, and then we drove around those things.
Heavily fortified. All right, go ahead.
Yeah. And then we got to sort of like the precipice, which brings me to my second point about the 1990s. It was not a perfect decade, but the music got a lot better in a hurry. Prior to the 1990s.
Yes. I think Mr. Zomers has dialed something up here.
Yeah.
This is what people were listening to back in the 1990s.
I know, and this is going to make me popular with a lot of listeners out there that, I don't know, like Girl School by Britney Fox, but was not a favorite of mine. Anyway.
I was telling this much. We were not playing this song at WRCO here at Richland Center in the 90s.
I don't even think, Phil should do another show called Those Weren't the Days and then play all that. Anyway, that'll be on real late. So the music that was playing right before we kind of shoved off and went down this vertical drop, highest vertical drop in the state of Wisconsin, mind you, was an Alice in Chains tune called Man in the Box. And I was really thankful for that because I kind of got a good groove work. And what it did, along with all the beer that was in my system, was really just blinding me to the fact that what we were about to do was incredibly stupid.
Do you realize that just as you were going over the edge?
Yeah, basically, the song sort of crescendoed, and then he just launched it over the edge.
And now this is the actual ski hill which you're going down, correct?
Absolutely. Now, I believe that the run was called Dusky at the time.
All right.
And as we were, first of all, I was in the backseat. Drinking buddy number one was sitting next to me. Then the driver and his girlfriend are in the front seat. And I do remember sort of looking into the dash area and seeing that the speedometer went from zero to nearly buried in like about 3 seconds. Like we were going very, very, very fast. Now, that brings me to my third point about the 1990s.
Yes.
I think it was an era of some optimism. And I'm not going to say that's why I got into a car and drove down a ski hill. But I do think that it's worth pointing out that there was this break, sort of a break between the 1980s when everyone thought we were quite possibly going to get vaporized by the Soviets in nuclear war, to, you know, the calamity 9/11 and the financial crisis, where we, you know, aside from a kind of a president who we found out later was not a very good guy in the form of Bill Clinton, it was a decade of some optimism. The Berlin Wall fell. There were many things to actually feel like, hey, maybe we got this thing going in the right direction. And then, no, we didn't. But anyway, there was some hope. So at this point, buoyed by this optimism, the car starts spinning uncontrollably. And I'm really telling you, like round and around and around and around. Like basically, it was a scene from the Ample Dumpling Gang or something. It's spinning round and around and around and around. Which brings me to my last point about the 1990s, which is people at this point have to be asking themselves, like, why would you ever do something? And it's very, very, very fair point. But I do think it definitely was a different time to be alive. Mainly, we just didn't have the panoply and plethora of diversions that people have today to keep themselves occupied. I mean, at this point, there is no internet. It was like really, really in its infancy and pretty much just confined to universities, not in wide use with the public yet. And so we just found a lot of stuff to do to kind of like interest ourselves in ways that we'd have a story to tell later. And I kind of got to be honest, like when I entered into this, I'm like, well, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know something's going to happen. And I'm going to have a pretty good story to tell out the backside. One that I've now told for, I believe this is the 35th year. Anyway, we're spinning round and round and round. And at this point, I really like am seriously considering that the car is either going to roll or we're going to go like dead into this forest that's like directly ahead of us. God and Lord. Very much by the grace of God, it pulls completely out of the spin. And we just kind of leisurely drive down the rest of the hill. And I got out of the car. I absolutely took one look at it. It was caught. The car was literally sort of knocked off the frame, if that makes sense. Oh, the tires were sticking out further than outside of the wheel wells, basically.
Because you went airborne for a while, right?
Oh, yeah. Probably. Well, that was, how did I miss that? That was as soon as we hit the drop, we hit a head wall and went airborne. And the driver did not take his foot off the gas because go faster, you know? And I remember the wheels just spinning in the air and just like, oh, no, no good. But yeah, the passenger seat broke and the woman in the passenger seat landed in Drinking Buddy's number one lap. And so we got out of the car. We're like, see you later. And just absolutely like ran in the other direction. And I'm not sure whatever happened. Everybody was safe. It was kind of an amazing experience. My wife and I were up there, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, and I showed her where we did this. She's like, no, you did not. And as my father-in-law used to say, that's the story of that.
Well, it's a fantastic story. And number one, so nobody got hurt?
Nobody got hurt. Nobody got hurt. At all. Oh, I mean, the few bruised ribs, the passenger had a bump on her head. I, of course, walked away totally unscathed.
And of course, because you're the hero of the story. But the story you wrote, the wheels were like tilted. I mean, the whole
was out a little bit. Like, the car was just undrivable. And
it was like a cartoon thing.
Yeah, it's totally like a Looney Tunes looking car. And we did hear that was my last year working at the Hill. We did hear later that they put up some sort of barrier to ensure this never, ever would happen again.
It became infamous on the Hill.
I think it, I don't know if it was legendary there or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly just try. I had escaped with my life, and at that point, just wanted kind of no more connection to the event until enough time had passed. I could start talking on it on a station at 22 radio stations.
Yes, the statute of limitations has passed.
Yeah, I think statute of that.
I think you bring up a great point, and I want to talk more about this on the other side of the break. But, I mean, it's a great story, and it's hilarious to read. But this whole point of, you know, does our sense of fun change the older that we get? And also, has technology changed what fun is? So we'll ask Chris a couple of serious questions on this on the other side. We're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking to Chris Pauls from Crack.com. Don't go anywhere. More Ski Hill stories or something like that on the other side. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network across the state of Wisconsin and around the world on the Civic Media app. If you don't have it, download it to your Apple or Android device. It is 10 minutes now before the hour of 3 o'clock at the top of the hour. Network news and weather followed by our friend, our colleague, Matt Flynn with Matt Flynn Direct. You're going to learn something, going to probably chuckle along the way, be entertained. Great callers, as always, Matt Flynn Direct coming up after the top of the hour news. Right now, our great friend, Chris Paul, CP, from Cracked.com, formerly of The Onion, and most importantly, like me, a native of Richland Center, Wisconsin, where we are in today at WRCE, WRCO here in Southwest Wisconsin. Talked about this great story Chris wrote for Cracked called The 90s Were a Perfect Decade to Drive Down a Ski Hill. And he did, and he survived to tell the story. But Chris, you brought up this point that I want to get your take on that, you know, a little bit more serious, but I think it equally is interesting. And that is, you know, as we get older, I mean, you and I are roughly the same age, and this happened in the, you know, the early 90s when, I mean, you and I had our little TV show down at UW Platteville in the early to mid 90s, and you went on to do fantastic stuff, and I just putzed around until now. But the point is that does our sense of fun change from when we're in our mid-20s or early 20s to mid-20s to now when we're not? And also, you brought up this whole thing of not having the internet, which, you know, I think the kids or young adults were much more creative back in the late 80s, early 90s.
I don't know if I completely
disagree.
Creativity's different. I just think it's a different thing. I will say that to your first point about your sense of fun changing, I think that's largely true, right? Because, I mean, age changes everyone. I mean, that's a cliche, but it cuts pretty close to the mark. I mean, you and I are not doing the same things for fun. I mean, my wife and I went to a concert last Friday night that didn't start till 8 o'clock, and we're like, oh boy, you know, really, like, wheeling tires here now. Like, look out, Madison. We're going to be out till 10 tonight. But yeah, I think that changes, but I think the manner in which you approach fun hopefully doesn't. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is just like, I hope that people don't, as they age, feel any less sort of muted sense of fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope that kind of like the faces change or the things change, but you still feel that same joy. You know what I mean?
Right,
fun
right,
is fun, right. Todd. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
But I mean, you lived a more typical youthful life than I did. I mean, good Lord, you know, when you were driving or in cars going down ski hills, I was attending Republican state conventions. You know, I was a prude. I was a suit, you know, and now I feel like I'm maybe more adventurous at, you know, 50 something than I was at 23.
I'd argue what you're doing is more dangerous, Todd.
Well, I survived, I guess. But I want to get back. You really, I mean, because I look at kids and I look at young people today. And yes, I mean, people that can program things and all that, I'm in awe. I'm just saying, it's sad to me because when you and I were kids, we were playing whatever, you know, cops and robbers or whatever down by the footbridge, and we were outside and we were
here's what I want you to do,
running around the woods. We weren't on a freaking tablet.
here's what I want you to do. I want you to lift that blind behind you and shake your fist at those clouds out there. Oh, man. By the way,
Republican presidential candidate Doug Burgum here, a potted plant.
All right, you darn clouds. I just think this is, you know, every generation gets this. I think the baby boomers looked at us. Remember the, like, the labels they slapped on us, like slacker. And, you know, they're just like, oh, this TV these kids are watching all the time. They just sit in front of the TV. How's that any different than, hey, they're looking at a tablet. They're looking at a phone. So I do think that, like, I just think there's so many more options, right? Like, yeah. I just believe that media in general is often adductive, not reductive. Like, okay, we're not using the telegraph anymore, but clearly radio is still a thing because here we are. And the younger people of today, it's just like, you know, admittedly, cable was a thing when we were in high school. Well, maybe what, like 20 channels then?
Yeah.
Later expanded to, you know, kind of like exponential numbers there. But when you start talking about the power that's available in this thing, like, right, you know, the whole world at your fingertips, that's different. And I think that can be, like, you can be super creative with that, or, you know, it can be not a great thing. You just turn into, like, some doom scrolling, you know, sad sack and let it affect your life, like, in that way, like, not great.
You know what it's great for? Now, I will say this. You know, like, two-year-olds who used to sit and scream in a restaurant while you're trying to eat, now they just put that cell phone or tablet, kid shuts right up and just stares at it. I think that's fantastic. Fries his brain, but it keeps that kid quiet. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, like, and once upon a time I was sitting in front of the TV. Let's just say that lazy parenting is forever. Let's just say that.
Well, that much I'll agree with you on. A couple more minutes left. Chris, you were in tune with many of our guests that you helped get on this show. We appreciate that. Any updates you're hearing on this Hollywood writers and actors strike? Are we going to have any new content coming this fall, or are we in for more episodes of Survivor times 10?
I don't see this from the people that I talk to. Like, they're back at the table, and that's always a good thing, but from what I'm hearing, like, there are a lot of things to unwind in this that weren't. And let's be honest, in the past, it was never an easy thing to unwind. Now it's even more complicated. The amount, and I think that we've talked about this a lot at Crack. The hard thing for people to wrap their head around in the general population is, like, why should I, you know, care about any of this? Well, the thing is, it's just like people don't understand is, like, there's definitely a very working class, not only in Hollywood, but across all media. And that's who's getting squeezed in this thing the hardest.
Yep.
It's the working people. It's not the stars. It's not the executives making all the money. It's the middle ground people. So, like, in Hollywood, it's everybody that could benefit from, like, restructuring this deal. And honestly, that's one place where trickle-down economics actually works. Because when the show makes more money, then more people get paid more money, even if greedy producers and all the other greed heads at the top are taking a lot of
it. But that's because of unionization. Sure. The reason that it trickles down, right?
It is true. Like, those unions do provide they wouldn't be at the table right now. Mm-hmm. Like, there isn't a table without that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just dictated to you. So, I mean, like everything, unions have pluses and minuses, but, like, in this particular instance, I agree. Like, without the strength of that union, they wouldn't even be having a conversation right now. It'd be a one-way conduit of information.
I saw a story over the weekend, or else some more, I can't remember which. There's some AI school now, and like, their mascot is a robot dog. I'm done with the robot dogs. Chris Pauls from crack.com. You're always fantastic. Keep those cars off the ski hill. Stay tuned. Matt Flynn is next. This is the Tall Ball Show on the Civic Media Network. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.
Thanks.